Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. With highs today in the 80s, it's a little hard to believe that this time last year, Boston was still under several inches of snow.
Of course, it's not just one day today. And according to the Blue Hill Observatory, this winter was the second warmest and second least snowy on record after 2001-2002.
And that has more than just implications for the way we dress. Today, we thought we'd take a big look at what all this heat and sunshine means for New England, from apple orchards to allergies to wildlife to wildfires.
So if you have any questions or observations about what the weather means to you, whether you're celebrating or not, join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And we've got a few people sort of lined up to talk about the weather and the current weather trend and to answer your questions and our questions. And we're going to start right now with Joan Walsh. She's right here in the studio with us. She's the director of bird monitoring for the Massachusetts Audubon Society. Welcome to you, Joan Walsh. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So let's start with migratory birds. How big a deal is this weird weather? As we go forward, it's becoming less and less weird, but warmer than usual weather. What's it doing to these birds?
Well, when we talk about how weather is affecting birds, it's important to understand that there's sort of three basic strategies. Some birds stay here all year round. Some birds are short-distance migrants, so may only go as far as Florida. And some are long-distance migrants and may go very far away, down to Central South America. So the birds that are resident birds generally can track what's going on. And you may start seeing cardinals or chickadees in your yard starting to carry nest material already,
mm-hmm.
6 weeks early. Because, you know, they've got their finger on the pulse of Massachusetts and what's going on. It's warm. There's bugs coming out. And, you know.
So they're a little more in touch with what's happening right away, right?
Absolutely.
On the ground. I see.
That's right. And several studies reveal that those sorts of birds, resident birds, are doing very well in the United States and in Europe. Because they're able to track the changing climate. Now, the birds that are short-distance migrants, they're not getting the signal quite as well because they may be as far away as Florida.
Hmm.
And birds that are quite far away are going to be tuned into leaving at certain dates and arriving. And the worry is that the farther away these birds are, the more they may decouple from the food source that will fuel their migration.
I see. And that's because as they start their migratory sort of move north, they're too late for the food because it's been warm for so long?
That's correct. They found some Dutch scientists who did some work have found that resident birds are doing okay adapting to climate, but that birds that are wintering in Africa, by the time they arrive in the Netherlands, the bugs have already hatched out, and they are finding as much as 80% decline in long-distance migrants because when they get there, there's no food. To raise your young, you need high-protein sources. You can't just snuffle around and eat berries.
So, Joan, let's talk about aquatic life. What about this warm weather? I'm assuming that certain fish are going to be coming up, for example, from the deep bottoms more toward the top. Is that fair?
Well, when we talk about freshwater fish, obviously there's not a lot of migration that goes on with freshwater.
Right.
You're sitting in a lake, and so you go down to the bottom of the lake. There's some concerns that with the very warm winter that we had, with no ice cover on the lakes, that keeps the lakes from going into a real winter cycle.
And so,
for instance, now, March 15th, you can already be catching some largemouth bass, which is, you know.
And usually that doesn't happen until much later in the spring.
No, that would be 4 weeks later. And that's the tangible part of that cycle that we can look at right now. But what that cascade is going to mean is unknown because we're very far out on the curve. Being one of the warmest winters in one of the warmest decades in one of the warmest 100 years.
Well, let's take a call. We've already got some calls lined up. Sarah's calling from Norwell with a question about what's going on in the waters. Hey, Sarah.
Hi. Actually, it's a comment. I am a watershed ecologist at a local watershed association, and part of my job in the spring is to coordinate volunteer herring counts. So counting the herring that are migrating into the coastal streams. And we typically start our counts about April 1st, and they run through the end of May. And usually the volunteers have a week or two of seeing nothing. I've already had to alert all of my volunteers because the fish are here. So we kind of have had to scramble to get out to the fish ladders and start counting the fish as they're migrating in from the ocean into the coastal streams.
Fascinating, Sarah. Thanks so much for the call. So, Joan Walsh, there's Sarah talking about having to get her volunteers moving because the fish are showing up way ahead of schedule.
Yeah, it's astonishing that, it's people like Sarah who are out there in the field, you know, for years collecting information, really monitoring, which is something that it's not sexy science. People don't always really want to give us money for us.
Yeah.
But then when we start getting these massive anomalies, we turn to people just like Sarah and to find out what they're measuring and how that is changing. And I think the herring are coming in from the ocean. I wish she was still there.
I think she is. Sarah, are you still with us?
I think that's how herring work.
Yeah,
so they're coming in. They're getting their signals from the ocean. They're coming inland to spawn. Is that right? Up the rivers? Yeah.
They're anadromous fish.
Anadromous, yeah.
Most of their adult life out in the ocean,
right.
And then they migrate into fresh water to spawn in the spring. And there's two species of river herring, alewives and blueback herring. And they both like to come into the streams when they are at about a little over 50 degrees Fahrenheit. So they really trigger to that water temperature, and because the water is that much warmer, that much earlier, we've been seeing the fish. Temperature-wise, they're right on time.
All right, Sarah, thanks. Joan, let me move on to another animal, bats. They've been taking it on the chin for a while now. This doesn't help their cause, or does it?
No, no one would predict that this sort of winter is going to help them. It is tricky business to both migrate, and it is tricky business to hibernate. Bats that stay in Massachusetts all through the winter have to go into it quite chubby and in really good condition, mm-hmm. so that they can come through it in optimal condition for the spring. That's their strategy. It's worked for tens of thousands of years. With this disease, white nose, one of the things that's happening is they're so compromised by that it's using up their stored reserves. Now, that implies that maybe they've been able to sleep the whole winter and really use very little of their reserves. If we've also had them in sort of a sub-hibernation state because it's been so warm,
mm-hmm.
and they've got the added pressure of trying to carry this disease, you'd have to think that this is a recipe for disaster for them. Again, it's a wait and see. We need to be monitoring what bat populations are doing.
So a little bit more monitoring, a little waiting and seeing. We're talking to Joan Walsh. She's director of bird monitoring for the Massachusetts Audubon Society, and we're taking your questions about what all of this warm, unseasonably warm weather means. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK.
You know, every year it seems that it feels like spring may be coming a little bit earlier and earlier. So does that change your conception of spring in New England? Or maybe you remember that April Fool's Day storm from many years ago. Winter doesn't give up easily. Again, at the number that Anthony mentioned is 800-423-8255. We were talking about fish counts. Another thing that we count in this weather, pollen.
Achoo.
So maybe you're thinking, here come my allergies with all this beautiful weather.
Already here.
Well, we received this tweet today from Boston EMS. They tweeted, allergies can exacerbate other medical conditions, especially asthma. People should watch the weather and know their illness. Well, joining us now is Dr. Andrew McGinnity. He's Associate Clinical Director in the Division of Immunology at Children's Hospital. Dr. McGinnity, welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Does Boston EMS have a good point?
Yeah. The pollen season has hit a lot earlier this year. Typically, it doesn't happen until April and often until the middle of April. And here we are, not even really most of the way through March, and the pollen counts are already shooting up. We're hearing from a lot of patients whose allergies have kicked in already.
So in that case, are you seeing, the allergy-asthma connection, are you seeing more emergency room admissions?
Absolutely. We haven't seen that yet, but we're worried about it. And we're certainly hearing from people who have allergies and asthma that they're having trouble exercising, running outside, stuff like that.
Well, I wonder. I mean, so pollen is one thing, but correct me if I'm wrong on the science, but elevated heat also, does that affect atmospheric pollution that might exacerbate people's breathing problems?
If you drive in the city, you may have noticed that the traffic has gotten worse because at night people are out doing stuff, driving places instead of just holing up when it's cold inside. So the pollution level is probably higher, and that can interact with the pollen. So it's sort of a two things interacting are worse than either one alone.
Okay, so what do you recommend people do when we have hot spikes like this?
Yeah, so if you are pollen allergic, we recommend that you keep your windows closed and run your air conditioning, even if you don't need to do it for the temperature. That will help filter the pollens out of the air. And so when you're inside, which is probably most of the time, you won't be breathing in the pollens, especially for kids. But anybody who's outside a lot should take their change clothes, wash their hair, and take a shower when they come in. Otherwise, the pollen sticks in your hair, it gets on your pillow, and you're breathing it in all night instead of just when you're outside.
Yeah, I wonder, there may be cooler weather on the way. Who knows? You know that old adage, if you don't like this weather, wait a minute. But I wonder, all the recommendations you just gave, does that still mean that people just need to sort of grin and bear it through these heat spikes? Or once your allergies get going, are you more sensitive just throughout the rest of the season?
Yeah, and that's one of the problems with the longer season. So really what allergies cause is inflammation in the airway, both the nose, which is the upper airway, the sinuses, and then down into the lungs. And when you start the season, you have a little bit of inflammation or no inflammation, and so a given pollen count may cause mild symptoms. As the pollen season goes on, you get more and more inflammation, so the same pollen count will cause more and more and more severe symptoms. And so as the season gets longer, you have time for more inflammation to accumulate, and so the same pollen count in 2 months will make patients feel a lot worse than they feel now.
So these elongated springs may not be such a great thing for allergy sufferers.
They're a bad thing. There also may be some changes in sort of from Virginia south. There are really two grass pollen seasons, one in the late spring and then another one in the fall, because the grass has time to pollinate twice. In New England, we've never seen that. It's always just a late spring, early summer thing. But I worry with this year, we could start seeing sort of a double season, which would make it twice as bad for patients.
Wow. We've got some calls here. Sue is calling from Sudbury. Welcome to Radio Boston, Sue.
Oh, thank you. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is about the bees. With everything blooming so early, I'm hoping that's not going to be a detriment to the bee population, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Joan Walsh, that sounds like a question for you.
Not for you? there's concerns overall about this decoupling of what should be happening and what is going to be happening with this sort of unprecedented warming that we're going to have. And certainly bee populations, native bee populations, are in a tailspin. And anyone who's keeping honeybees knows about bee collapse and all the problems there. Again, this is something that you would predict is going to be problematic, especially if we get a cold snap after this. I can't profess to knowing a whole lot more about bees other than that.
Well, while we have you on the question of wildlife, what about large mammals? I'm thinking bears, for example, and we all know they go to sleep and hibernate in the cold weather. Are suddenly the bears going to be waking up much earlier because of this warm weather?
Well, I know that when I got from DCR, the state wildlife biologist, I'm on their newsletter list, and we did get something the other day saying, be alert for bears waking up early and being out early. The bears will be out with their young, and for the most part, they're going to be looking for bugs. So if they're waking up and it's warm, the thing that they want to eat, they're not berry eaters at that point. They're mostly going to be going around looking for bugs. And again, if we have a precipitous drop in temperatures after this, back to seasonal temperatures, that may become very difficult for them. But you can expect that this sustained sort of 2 weeks of warm temperatures, everything is getting signals now. Magnolias are opening 4 weeks before they should be opening. Everyone seems to have a story when they're coming in. So you can expect that it's going to be anything that's resident is going to start to get a signal that to have a spring agenda.
In my mind, I have to say that just drags me right back to the allergies question.
Yeah.
But I mean, mostly because when I was growing up, I grew up on the West Coast, and I had horrible grass pollen allergies. Like, I could not go outside. When I moved here umpteen years ago, honestly, my allergies were totally relieved because I guess it wasn't the same species of grass or whatnot, Dr. McGinnity. But I guess I have to ask you, we're talking about these elongated seasons. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing allergy sufferers progressively come to you earlier and earlier every year?
Yeah, it. I think this year is exceptional. So it really depends when the weather gets warm. So, for example, last year it was not anywhere near this early and would have been about typical by historical norms. But this year is really close to a month early, and almost so much that at first I didn't believe it from my patients. I thought they were making it up, but it's clear it really has hit pretty hard already.
Oh, it just seems so tragic because you want to be out there enjoying the beautiful weather. You want to, you know, maybe catch the bears waking up early.
That's right.
I don't know. But we are talking about the phenomenally sunny and warm day we're having today and this very warm spring we've been having so far. If you've got any questions, we have a wildlife expert and an allergy expert here. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joan Walsh and Dr. Andrew McGinnity, if you could just hang on for a second. We want to take another quick turn here from the world of sneezes and animals to even more flora, because the warm weather is obviously having a major impact on plants and agriculture. And in Vermont, the Maple Sugar Association is predicting around half a normal harvest of maple syrup this year. They need a consistent overnight freeze and thaw cycle, I should say, to make that sap run.
And on the south coast of Massachusetts, winemaker Bill Russell at Westport Rivers Vineyard usually has about 2 months this time of year to prune and trim his vines. But this year,
we've got to be ready for an early bud break. And so we're currently kind of hammered down out in the vineyard, and we're trying to tie down 80 acres of grapes in the next 3 weeks.
In the Neshoba Valley, the apple trees are already budding, which puts them in a vulnerable position this early in the spring when temperatures could still drop. A little earlier, we reached Frank Carlson, general manager of Carlson Orchards in Harvard, Massachusetts.
Frank, are you out in your orchards right now?
No. Fortunately or unfortunately, I'm on vacation. I'm in the south right now this week, and it's just nerve-wracking to be here seeing this season coming so early. Feeling a little bit nervous of not being there helping my brother with some spraying operations that I think he's got going on right now. The earliest I ever remember spraying was on April 9th.
So he's spraying, and this is, pesticides, right?
Basically, putting on fungicides.
Fungicides, okay.
Because as soon as any green tissue starts to show, then we have a threat of scab inoculation onto the leaves, and then if it develops on the leaves, later on it goes onto the fruit.
So we're seeing buds now. When do you usually see buds?
First week, second week in April.
I see. So we're several weeks early then, right?
We are about a month early right now.
I see. What's the implication of that? What happens, for example, if we get another frost after all these trees have put out their buds?
We'd be concerned on a freeze in Harvard. A freeze, and that would obviously affect the bud development and then the fruit. There'd be no fruit if the bud froze.
I see. There'd be no fruit because the trees only bud once, right?
Right, that's correct. We only have one bud a year, one bloom a year.
So what happens if there is no frost? Does the extra long growing season, is that good news for your business?
It could be, but we've got a long way to go before we put the apples into the bag and into the stores. It depends upon the summer, whether we have a drought, what the temperatures are for the summer. There's a lot of factors that go into the final production and the final harvest of a crop.
Well, Frank, it sounds like instead of enjoying what I'm sure is a well-deserved break, time off down south, you're concerned about your apples up here in Harvard.
Yeah, but unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about the weather. We have to just sit back and watch it. We can't stop this high temperature. You know, if you look at the weather map across the country, everything seems to be a little screwed up this year.
Well, Frank, good luck to you. We wish you well.
Thank you very much.
That's Frank Carlson. He's general manager of Carlson Orchards in Harvard, Massachusetts.
So the hot weather is not all good. We've got some callers here. Anita's calling from Melrose. You're on the air, Anita.
Hello. My question is about birds. I'm a backyard bird feeder. I usually take everything down and put it away on April 15th after the migrants have all come through. But if the migrants are going to be late this year and or miss their food source, should I leave the suet cage and seed feeders up?
Great question, Joan Walsh.
Anita, I think that it's it would be a prudent thing for you to do, to leave the food up. It also may not be a bad year to put your hummingbird feeders out a little bit early. There's already been reports of hummingbirds in Connecticut, which is 3 weeks early. And hummingbirds, of course, rely on natural food sources as they migrate up. But one thing you need to be extra cautious of, if we do get a cold snap and you have hummingbird feeders out, bring them in at night, because in the morning you don't want the hummingbirds to get a belly full of really cold nectar, because it can damage both their bills and it can damage the birds. So your instincts are right on that. I think that I would feed a little longer than you typically would.
Dr. Andrew McGinnity, I just have to throw one more question to you, because we're talking about all these things that are emerging early. One thing that emerges early when the weather gets warm in the Boston area are joggers mm-hmm. and exercisers. You can see people running on the Esplanade. I mean, I wonder, is that something that you're concerned about, because people are going to be out exercising more, being, you know, encountering all that pollen that we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, sure. It certainly can trigger worse allergies and exercise-induced asthma. So there are some things people can do. Early in the morning, the pollen counts may be a little low, although there's surprisingly little data about that. After a rainstorm is a good time, because when the winds blow through, that'll raise the pollen counts, but then the rain washes the pollen out of the air. So that would be a good time to be out and exercising.
And Joan, let me ask you this final question. When we think of the warm weather and sort of summer coming and late spring, we think of mosquitoes and all of those sorts of irritating bugs. Are we going to be worse off after the sort of warm winter that we've had in this regard?
Well, the expectation would be that I can't sit out on my deck in Concord. I've already got enough mosquitoes at night that I can't be out there at night. The expectation would be that, yes, it's going to be a rough year for mosquitoes, especially if we start to get some rain. Right now we're on track for drought, really, not excess rain. And ticks would be another thing that anyone who's a dog walker knows, that there has not been a month without ticks.
So a tough spring and summer ahead for ticks and mosquitoes.
That would be my expectation.
All right. Joan Walsh, thanks. Director of Bird Monitoring for the Massachusetts Audubon Society, thanks so much for coming in.
And Dr. Andrew McGinnity, please tell me at least that you're going to be out there enjoying this weather today.
Absolutely.
Okay. Dr. Andrew McGinnity is the Associate Clinical Director in the Division of Immunology at Children's Hospital. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Coming up, the Afro-laden beats of Boston's own Mango Blue. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Enjoy this weather. Take us out with you in a podcast. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. We'll be right back.